Good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High in studio with you today. And, of course, it is now time for Greenside Up. And in studio today, we have with us, we have Jacob Weber and James Corver. Guys, how are you doing this morning?
Good morning.
Really good.
All right, guys. Again, you're back after last week. You guys had, big to-do up in Manhattan last week. So couldn't have you guys on last week. So we definitely missed you guys last week.
Yeah. Thanks for missing us. Yeah. We had a big powwow up in Manhattan called Annual Extension Conference. And, of course, we get to go up there and have all sorts of fun, get to hear some speakers, do some program planning, and generally goof off.
Sounds like you had a good time, though, so yeah. That's always a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, Jacob, you were wanting to talk about today, kind of basically like your last chores of the season everything's kind of winding down now.
It has wound down,
yeah,
I guess.
It got cold
and
quick, didn't it?
We're going to have a hard frost or hard freeze here, I guess, expected down to 27. Yeah, that's kind of a gentle hard freeze. That's not really a serious hard freeze. And, of course, I just heard a little advertisement about kale, planting kale. Kale's a very winter-hardy plant. It will survive the winter without any extra care. It might get leaves burned back a little bit over the winter, but it'll pop right back up and be ready to go next spring. And also, on a side note, if you want to plant some spinach, it's a good time. You won't get much for the fall crop, but if you plant it now, you'll have an earlier crop next spring. But I don't think there's a whole lot of folks that are real interested in planting stuff now.
Right.
But, yeah, that's one crop that could be planted in the fall, about the same time wheat is planted. And I guess another crop, if you want to think about it, garlic. Garlic is generally planted in the fall, about the same time wheat is planted, and that'll make a good spring crop. I don't know how many vampires we have out there to ward off, but if you do have an issue with vampires, do plant some garlic.
There you go.
Okay. Garden chores, clean up the garden, get that garden cleaned up. Sanitation, very important for reducing issues, not eliminating, but reducing issues next year. There are some insects that will continue to feed on cold parts of the crop, such as squash bug, and if you remove their food source, it reduces their chances of overwintering. Squash bugs must overwinter successfully as an adult insect in order to propagate the species next year on your squash plants. The adult insect has to be mature enough to have sufficient body fat. You don't think of squash bugs as being fat or accumulating fat, but they do have to accumulate a significant amount of body energy reserves in order to survive the winter. If it's especially cold winter, it might take a little bit more unless they find a good sheltering spot like inside your house in a cool spot. They emerge the following spring as mature adults, and as soon as they start feeding on your squash plants and they start mating and laying eggs, and then you have the problem all over again. Stop them now by cleaning up your garden. Chop up the debris, put it in a compost pile, or if it works, you can pile it up and burn it if it's dry enough to burn. That would be another good way of getting rid of the infected crop debris. Garden's cleaned up. You rake the leaves off the lawn. It's important to get fallen leaves off the lawn, especially if you have a really nice lawn. And leaves that accumulate on the lawn and remain in place over the winter generally will result in a dead spot in that lawn the following spring because of issues of certain fungi that are active in cool temperatures. We call them snow molds. And they will infect and kill grass plants. So if we keep that lawn clean, that will help reduce the issue with dead spots resulting from snow mold. You can also use a mulching type mower and chop up the leaves and let them filter back down into the turf. That is another successful way of getting rid of the leaves. Other than that, you can rake them up and have them picked up for some municipal composting. You can compost them yourself if you wish, or if permissible, you can burn them. Then you got gardening equipment, gardening tools that need to be cleaned up. It's always good to always clean the tools after you use them, remove the soil and other debris, because the soil that clings to the shovel or hoe will cause the metal to rust, and we like to keep that metal nice and shiny smooth, so it would be a easy using tool the next time you use it. Also, if you clean it up, you prevent that dust and debris from getting taken into the garage where you store your tools or the tool shed. Then power equipment, lawnmowers and garden tractors, things like that. They need to be serviced, change the oil if necessary, sharpen the mower blade or replace it. Do the necessary servicing of the equipment. If you have a battery in the tool itself, you might remove the battery and charge it up. Make sure it has sufficient fluid, and then store the battery in a protected shed, especially away from children because of the danger of electrical shock or electrical shock, a short circuit. So kid put wires across the terminal, it will of course short circuit the battery and potentially cause an explosion. Also, it could result in that wire becoming extremely hot and burning the hands of the children. At least want to keep any batteries out of the reach of children. It's always a good idea not to leave the battery in the equipment unless you're going to be using it for wintertime use, such as snow removal. So those are some of the things that we think about we could do at the end of the season. Keep you busy so you stay out of trouble.
We're going to head over to James real quick. I know you're having a problem with your headphones. We'll fix that during the break. But James, you were talking about a few programs that is coming up pretty soon here.
Yeah. I've got a number of programs coming up. I've got some really good ones. The first one I have coming up is Farm Succession and Tax Control. And this program is kind of like how it sounds. We're going to be talking about the methods of creating wills and trusts, the estate planning, and actually all the legal implications that go along with that, as well as a little bit of tax planning as well. Because as you know, with estates, there's going to be taxes, and tax planning during the good years and the bad years, and making those things balance. And so that program will be on November the 21st at the Southeast Research Extension Center, just north of Parsons. It'll be in the evening, probably around, it'll be from 6 to 8 o'clock, and we'll cover a lot of those topics. The importance of this, of farm succession, there's kind of two types of farm succession as we think about it. One type of farm succession is just where basically it's the slow process of somebody taking over a farm, as in transferring efforts from one generation to the next, right? Really. And so, however, there's another type of farm succession, which is more of the mechanical pieces of inheritance. Basically, that one involves, if someone dies, honestly, right? That's how that other part of succession works. It's the financial piece. And more often than not, there becomes issues with that if you do not plan properly, and for a lot of good reasons. The issues that I mostly hear about are controversies among family. there's a lot of things at stake. There's a lot of vested interest, but all sorts of various parties. There can be issues that come up if you do not have your will, your plan, your trust. I mean, all of your estate planned out properly for when one generation to the next. And so that's kind of what this program is about. It's to get people comfortable with the terms, with the ideas, so that way maybe they can get started on the process. And it's a continual process. It's not, you don't just make a will and then you forget about it.
Right.
And then it's there someday after you're gone and you don't need to worry about it.
Right.
Because, you know, property changes, families change, usually they get bigger, and you know, you have to deal with the changing situation before. And so, and also it's something that you don't really want to rely on the state to deal with, because that's who will be in charge if you don't have anything. And you know, you don't, from the state's point of view, everything is a legal equivalence. They just break everything apart. There's no real concept of who wants to do what. It's all about the very specific financial aspect of it. And perhaps, you know, the taxes won't be, you, they don't really care so much if you're, how much taxes you're going to pay on the deal either. So you really want to get that set up before the state has any involvement whatsoever. It doesn't always work out if they get involved.
Right.
You know, and besides estate planning, I mean, you also want to think about the other pieces to this, the nuances, the financial feasibility of it. I mean, obviously when you're splitting your estate apart into various pieces, you're basically making a business enterprise for somebody. Well, is that financially possible? What about all of your debts that you might have? I mean, so there's pieces to that. What about the business plan? Your specific philosophy of farming, in a way. I mean, how are you going to transfer that from one generation to the next? And you also got to, of course, the most important part is communicating with your family. And this is often where people get into trouble. They're not communicating. So, I mean, it's all kind of together. And really, this program, it covers the very functional pieces to it. It's not so much the continual process. It's this specific stuff of the actual estate itself. And even though it says farm succession, it doesn't really, it's not just for farms. I mean, honestly, if you own a lot of assets, the wills, terms, trusts, estates, they're all going to be applicable. So
it could cover any kind of you know, 90, like you said, it doesn't even have to cover farm. It could be a different type of thing. Basically, it'll still apply pretty much.
Yeah. And so, I mean, of course, it'll be directed in general towards farm families, but it's not specific.
Right.
So. Yeah. But besides that, we got a couple of other programs coming up. In December the 3rd, we have a preseason deer program that's pre-rifle season. Archery's already going on. But pre-rifle season deer program. And we're going to be doing a lot of fun stuff out the research center there in Parsons. We're going to be doing some field dressing demonstrations. And so hunters will come in, and we're going to have a wildlife specialist. He's actually going to be field dressing a deer out there. And so we'll kind of see the proper way of doing that. Personally, I have no idea. I've never field dressed a deer, so that should be fun. We're going to talk about food plots. I was hoping to have food plots to tour this year, but then it kept raining during the time period I needed to plan it, so that didn't happen. But we'll talk about food plots. We'll talk about hunter safety, hunting laws, what the game warden will coming out, habitat management. Charlie Lee from Manhattan, the wildlife specialist, he'll be coming in. And so it'll just be a really great time to get people excited about the hunting season, about the rifle season. And so it's something good to come to. And of course, hunting laws and all that. There's a lot of stuff that's always changing as well. So these programs really kind of spread it out and let people know what's going on.
Okay, what we're going to do, we're going to go ahead and take a break here. James will come back and we'll go over some more programs that you have because we're getting right up on the break. But when we come back, we'll come back with James. He'll talk about more programs that are going on, and also we will take your calls if you have anything to ask Jacob or James about programs coming up, or if you have a question for Jacob about anything in particular. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.
Liebert Brothers has a variety of decor for the upcoming Thanksgiving holiday. Flags, candles, mailbox covers, pumpkins, solar turkeys, and pilgrims. Get ready to display your thanks with beautiful Thanksgiving decorations. Available now at Liebert Brothers, 8th and Willow, in Coffeyville since 1911.
County, Washington, and Nowata counties currently all within a thunderstorm warning.
All trees and brush being damaged from this storm.
See some flashes of lightning just off to the west, so it's definitely coming and it's definitely going to come
it
back.
Sounds like it comes, it hits.
Brought to you by Accudinair, Labette Health, and Star Roofing. Award-winning coverage from the Mighty 690 KGGF.
Good morning, everybody. We are back with Greenside Up as Jacob and James are back in studio with us, and we'll pick up where we left off with James. James, talking about a few of the programs that are coming up. James, sorry I had to cut you off back there, but let's go ahead and continue the conversation with all the programs that are happening.
That sounds good. And so before the break, I mentioned the farm succession and tax control one, all the estate planning, wills and trust. That'll be on November the 21st. And then the deer program on December the 3rd in the evening. But we also have agronomy night. And agronomy night, it's an annual event. It's been going on for a very long time. And it's right here in Montgomery County, usually in Independence. And so we'll have that. I'm thinking about, it's probably going to be on December the 17th. I still have some details to plan out with that one. But I haven't, with the speakers and all of that, but December 17th will be most likely the time frame for that. Besides that, it looks like the Southeast Kansas has been picked again for a corn school, and that will probably be on January the 8th. And these corn schools, kind of like soybean schools, they're a kind of an intensive afternoon and evening of all things about that particular commodity, and go through all the lessons. And you know, we talk about fertility and disease and all the strictly agronomic aspects to it. And so kind of the two save the dates, December 17th, January 8th, still some details to find out and still make flyers for that. But those will probably be the dates for them. Besides that, the Women in Ag event, we're going to have one here in the Wildcat District. There'll be sort of like satellite locations or places to do the Women in Ag program, and Independence and Parchlands and Hepler, and even in Chanute too, in the South Wind. And so I assume that sometime when Wendy is on, she'll explain those a little more. Those will be in the February time frame. And so there's a lot of programs coming up in the Wildcat District. So we're
guys are going to be busy.
Yeah, we're at the very cusp of the extension season. So there's a lot to do still.
But that's a good thing, though. Definitely, like Jacob said, it keeps you busy, keeps you out of trouble. So.
Yeah.
Well, Jacob, you were kind of, I guess, thinking out loud when you came back in the studio. A few more things that you wanted to discuss. I thought I heard you say something about pumpkins.
Pumpkins. Well, jack-o'-lantern pumpkins, they're out there. Probably not a whole lot to talk about on those jack-o'-lanterns. I did see some pumpkins that were not quite fully colored yet, but they had some color to them. And, of course, I don't know. If you want a jack-o'-lantern pumpkin, you want an orange one. And late season coloration, I guess you could have a greenish, yellow, or orangish colored jack-o'-lantern. Would probably be kind of spooky, maybe. But they'll go ahead and fully color. The jack-o'-lantern type pumpkins are not generally used so much for food, but they can be. They're edible. But there's other squash that can be. As far as storing squash, the winter squash, they store quite well. Some quite a bit longer than the others. I guess the longest storing squash would be the Hubbard squash. But if you've ever tried to get through the rind of a Hubbard squash, I think it takes a chisel or a jackhammer to get through those. Probably best baked in the shell and then scoop out the flesh. They're fairly large, but definitely you want something that's last all winter long. A Hubbard squash would be that type of squash. The storage conditions for squash usually store 45 degrees, 45-50 degrees under moderate humidity, not high humidity. Actually, the rind is what keeps the squash from deteriorating. That rind has to be very impervious, so the pumpkins should be fully mature. Some pumpkins go ahead and finish maturing and developing that hard rind. Some do not, and so the best thing to do is, if you are storing pumpkins, check them frequently, about once a week, because sometimes some of them fail to store, and they do deteriorate, and they do create an odor, and it's probably best to get them out before they deteriorate too much, because if you mess up, and you have a bigger mess to clean up afterwards. But always check the pumpkins, and that's true of other vegetables that are stored, like potatoes, sweet potatoes, onions. They should be frequently checked at least once a week, and remove the products that are starting to deteriorate, or use them if they're usable. Use them quickly so that they don't go to waste so much. They go in a compost pile otherwise, and off to go. That's just some thoughts. Late season fertilization of turf grass, that we're getting into a time period when we'd like to put that last application on the fesculons. We do not fertilize the warm season grasses at this time, because they're pretty much dormant. But fescue is a cool season type grass, and it will continue to develop the carbohydrate reserves and grow minimal growth during the winter months, but it is a grass that does benefit from late season fertilization, and that should be coming up here at the end of this month or the early part of next month. We'll have some kind of Indian summer days in November, I'm sure, where the temperature is going to be fairly mild and enjoyable outside. I sure hate to see a fall that is only 1 or 2 days long. We've had a few good fall days so far. I like to enjoy several weeks of fall weather, of nice fall weather, and the leaves falling off the trees and other activities that are associated with fall coming up before we get into the really cold part of winter, where it's too cold to do much of anything outside.
And well, it seems like in Kansas and Oklahoma, we don't have much fall. We go summer, a couple of days of fall straight into winter, and it seems like that's what's happening, because it's going to be really cold today. So
we have had years where we skip spring almost altogether. A couple of years ago, we had 2 days of spring sandwiched in between, I think it was Wednesday and Thursday of 1 week, and that was it. We went from winter to summer. And but I've seen years where we've had really nice extended fall weather, which is really great. I really enjoy that. And of course, the days are getting shorter, and that means that there's fewer hours of activity outside. By the way, we do Act of Congress changes the time here again.
That's right. Fall back this weekend.
Yeah. So we get a 25-hour day.
Yeah. And unfortunately for those people that work overnights, they have to work an extra hour. But
sorry about that, folks. But then next spring they get that back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where I worked at before, when I was working overnights, I got paid the 9 hours, which was great. But then I only got paid the 7 hours when we jumped ahead. Yeah. So, but I didn't have to be there as long either. So,
yeah.
It's one of those weird things. And also, the computer went crazy that night too. So it was like, nope, not liking this time change.
Yep.
Anyway, again, as you said, shorter days, and we do fall back this weekend. And How much of a difference does that make if, you know, I know farming's not as big in the winter, but does that make a difference? How much of a difference does that make?
For farmers?
Yes.
James got that one.
Okay.
It kind of depends. So what specifically are you talking about?
Well, the time change.
Yeah, the time change. Make,
yeah, it doesn't really change the farmers too
well,
much.
Well, I didn't know if they got out earlier or...
Yeah, kind of just do their own schedule. I don't even know if they really follow the clock the right. same way
they follow the day.
Does. Yeah, they yeah. follow the daylight more than yeah. anything
Okay,
else.
Daylight. Okay, sundown. All right, we're done today.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I didn't... Yeah. They got lights on the tractors and combines. They go with... As long as they can,
yeah.
and as fast as they can, because the opportunity to get harvest in, or the hay in, or the livestock worked, or anything like that, you work. You have to work really hard and fast.
Especially this time of year, because again, you don't have as much daylight to work with, so you got to work harder, faster, and just hope you can get everything done quickly.
Mostly, it affects the cattle guys around here, because a lot of them have day jobs, mm-hmm. and then they have to go home and feed their cattle, and then it gets cold and wet and gross,
right.
and so now they have less daylight hours to feed their cattle in mud and muck, so that's probably the hardest on them.
And of course, also, if you know, like you said, they have day jobs that come home around 5, well, it's already starting to get dark by then, it's just like they don't got much time.
It's going to get dark an hour earlier. Again,
exactly.
Congress, at least they could do that.
I know there's been some places talking about getting rid of the time change. I know Arizona, if I remember right, they don't do the time change. They're like, nope, we're leaving our clocks the same, which could be interesting. If you're traveling from out of state and you're expecting a different time change, you're like, okay, well, hold on. I thought this was a time change, but it's pretty interesting for sure. And also, I know Oklahoma talked about doing it. I don't know if Kansas has talked about doing with the time change or not. But
maybe they should just create more time zones.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll add an extra time zone right in the middle of the country.
That would throw everything off. That could create almost a civil war, I guess.
Well, there's that one town in Illinois that literally sits on the timeline. Half the town's in the Eastern time zone, the other half is in the Central time zone. So can you imagine that? Imagine if you work in Central time zone but live in the Eastern time zone. That's got to be weird to be going through that. Although
Northwest Kansas, Colby's in the Central time zone, and Goodland, just a few miles down the road, is in the Mountain time zone. So,
and in Oklahoma, you think the entire state is in the Central? Nope, the very tip where Kenton is. Yeah. It's actually in the Mountain time zone. So it's pretty interesting how they drew those time zone lines where you decided you live at. But anyway. There's one other thing I wanted to ask before we head out of here, and this was discussed a couple of weeks ago, and maybe both of you guys can help me with this. I was listening to the Plantarama program a few weeks ago, and they were talking about it's okay to plant trees around this time, but you know, the few things I heard is like, don't plant them too deep, plant them wide.
Okay. Yeah, I'll hop on that one. Fall planting of trees is a good time also. My personal preference, spring planting, because the selection is so much greater. But fall planted trees, they can go in. Of course, you have to remember, fall planted trees, the trees are not dormant. They are still pretty much active in their leaf tissue, but right now they would be going dormant. The root systems of trees never go dormant, and so they will continue to grow. And in warm soil, they grow much better and faster than they do in cold soil. And that's one of the advantages of planting in the fall is that we still have warm soil. The earth has not cooled off yet, but in the spring, it's pretty cold. And
right.
So root growth is slow. But then again, you're planting in the spring, you're planting a dormant tree. Or if you're planting a container-grown tree, you may be planting later in the spring. Dormant trees should be planted by the mid part of March. Early to mid-March would be ideal time in this area to plant a dormant tree, whereas you could still plant even up to late May, early June with a container growing tree. But that runs the risk of putting a lot of stress on the tree if you plant at that time. Fall planting is better because the temperatures are cooler and the moisture stress isn't generally as great, although it can be. Planting shallow is important for trees. You got to remember, tree roots don't go down deep.
Right.
You can't go down 25 feet with a tree root. Trees, they simply can't grow in the low oxygen soil. And that's what we have here is the low oxygen soil. You go down 2 or 3 feet, that's about it. Tree roots are going to grow lateral. And so we want to plant those trees so that their roots are growing lateral, sideways. So we want to make sure that they are growing in an area where there's adequate oxygen supply. And that's generally going to be in the top 8 to 12 inches of soil. You don't want to poke a tree down in the ground really deep thinking that that's where the roots are supposed to be. No, they're up right up where the action is, and they're competing with grass and other plants at the same time. So planting shallow, the top root of the tree, the first root that comes off the main stem, that should be no more than a couple of inches deep into the soil, and that's your guide. Spread the roots out lateral like the wagon wheel spokes. Spread them out. That means you're going to tear up that root ball a little bit and flare those roots, and then put the soil that they're going to grow in should go around the roots. Don't modify the soil that goes back into the planting hole with peat moss and other stuff, because that doesn't do the tree any good. It actually creates a pot in the soil and slows down the growth of those roots out into the soil they're going to grow in. Put the soil back in the hole that came out of the hole. If it's not a good place to plant a tree in that particular soil, probably better move the tree to some other location, because that probably won't be a good suitable spot for the tree.
All right. Well, it sounds like we have a call coming in. And, caller, you are on Greenside Up. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine. Good morning. How are you?
Doing fantastic.
Hey, I was wanting to ask about that Hunter's Quest that y'all were talking about a few minutes ago.
Yeah, go ahead.
When and where is that going to take place?
Yeah, it's going to take place. It's going to take place at the Southeast Area Research Center, which is just north of Parsons. It's on the Ness Road and 400 intersection there. But that'll be on December the 3rd. December the 3rd. We'll try to start around 5 o'clock because it gets dark real fast, and we're going to do a field dressing demonstration outside. And so we'll start shortly after 5. We'll probably go at around 7:30. But it's going to be fun. We're going to be grilling out there and just talking about all the different aspects of the deer season and hunting and dressing and management, deer management. So I expect it to be a really good program.
That's great. Is there a cost or an age limit for that?
No, there's no cost. There's no age limit. I mean, it's just general and free and whoever wants to come. So
yeah, I've got 2 young sons that are really interested in their hunting, and I heard that and I thought it'd be great to take them to it.
Yeah,
so they might be able to learn something.
Absolutely. This is a great place for young hunters to come out and kind of take a look and learn a little bit of the aspects of how to field dress and do all the other pieces, especially about the safety part of it at that age. So
that's great. So I can look that up online on y'all's website?
Yes, I'll be on our website. If it's not already, it'll be up there pretty soon. I haven't made the flyer yet, so I'm not sure it's on our website, but it will be shortly in the next week or so.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Have a great day.
Thank you very much, caller. We appreciate you calling, and you already got some excitement about that program coming up.
Yeah.
That is very, very good. Well, guys, our time is about up today. We thank you for coming in. Next week, it'll be Jacob and a Davin. That way I don't have to say Jacob and a guest coming every week.
There you go.
I now have our schedule who's going to actually be on air. So, but again, guys, thank you for coming in today, and drive safely out there as it's kind of wet and wild. So
okay,
all right, that's going to be it for it's going to be it for Greenside Up. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have open line. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.